Hello and welcome to another edition of the Sporting Kansas City Show right here on your home for Sporting KC Soccer, Sports Radio 810 WHB. Nate Bucati along with the one and only El Jefe, Carter Augustine. As always, what's up, Carter? How are you, man?
What's up, Nate? Doing great. How are you?
I'm doing fine. Sporting Kansas City still flying atop first place in the Western Conference on 14 points after a 2-2 draw against Seattle Sounders on Sunday, as they prepare for another home matchup, Western Conference matchup, against a Cascadian team, this time from north of the border, as Sporting KC will welcome the Vancouver Whitecaps to Children's Mercy Park on Friday at 8 o'clock. Coming up on the show today, we got a good one for you. Kerry Zavagnin, we will talk to him for possibly the last time as the all-time leader in starts and minutes played in regular season action for Sporting Kansas City, as he could be passed. He will be passed by Matt Beisler, assuming Matt Beisler starts and plays at least 54 minutes on Friday night. So we'll talk to Kerry Zavagnin about that, but plus get his thoughts on the Sporting KC result against Seattle and the upcoming game against Vancouver as well. We'll also hear some interesting comments from Peter Vermees at training today, an update on Felipe Gutierrez that he had for the media today and his health status, and maybe an update on the striker search 2018, and is that a real thing, or is Peter Vermees just toying with the media? We'll hear from him on that as well. So busy show coming up, Carter. Let's start off with our reaction to Sunday afternoon's matchup, Sporting Kansas City 2, Seattle Sounders 2. Sporting jumped out on a 1-0 lead on a penalty converted by Elie. The penalty was drawn by Johnny Russell, who was part of the reason that left back Nuhu had a rough day for Seattle. But Seattle pulled one back in stoppage time to close out the first half via Will Bruin. Then they took the lead in the second half on a good strike from Christian Roldan that he put in the bottom corner. But Sporting Kansas City responded 5 minutes later on a long run by Graham Zusi. That same man, Nuhu, had a difficult time keeping up with the lungs of Graham Zusi and didn't track back. Zusi went into the penalty area and calmly chipped it over the goalkeeper to make it 2-2. Sporting had some chances to take the final lead down the stretch, but couldn't put any of them away. And in the end, I think settle is the right word. They settle for a 2-2 draw in this one.
That's certainly what it sounded like in terms of hearing from all the coaching staff and the players after the game. They get a point, extends this unbeaten streak to 6 now after losing the opening match. So they're proving to be a really difficult team to beat in this league in this season. And again, they get a result from a losing position, and I don't think they got many of those last season. So I think there are those positives. But yeah, overall, didn't it seem that they really thought that they should have come away with 3 points in the game, because it wasn't that they were creating a whole lot of chances. They just didn't let Seattle create that much. And there were some good opportunities. Elie and Opara both in the second half had some good header opportunities from set pieces. And Kyrie Shelton had that wonderful chance in the first half. You just feel that Sporting KC had so much of the ball, and they created more chances, better chances as well, that, yeah, I think there is just a little bit of a bitter taste to this draw.
I know that that the XG stat comes with a more mathematical definition than this, but I feel like, you know, you got some goals, some chances that are coulda, some chances that are shoulda, and then some chances that are gotta. I felt like the Kyrie Shelton one's a gotta. You got to put that one away, because he had it inside the six and he had the time to take a touch and settle himself for it and then fire the shot without any real pressure around him. I feel like you got to put that one away, especially if you're number 9.
Yeah. And to break his duck so far this season as well, it seemed like the perfect chance. He did. I thought he did so well to be so calm on the ball.
Right.
It was a great move as well. And then the cutback finds him in just plenty of space inside the six. And he had enough time where he got the keeper sat down, turned around, had the whole goal, and then he just kind of fluffed it at the end. So, yeah, I think it is a gotta. It's gotta score that one.
The other two, I'll say maybe shoulda. Somewhere between shoulda and coulda. They were clean headers by Ike and Elie right around the six. They were open. They were in a place where they could snap it on frame. I'll say, you know, neither guy is a striker, for one thing, and I don't think either guy would say, well, I should still score that situation. But you know, they put him on frame. It's with the head. I don't know. It's still a situation where I think out of those three chances, you expect yourself to come away with at least one goal. Sporting does that. Maybe it's a different story. Of course, you never know how differently the game plays out. If Kyrie scores that first goal, maybe it snowballs in favor of Sporting Kansas City. They get another one in the first half, and it's game, set, match. Who knows? That's all stuff that's left to be a hypothetical. But I think the flip side of it, too, is Sporting Kansas City would tell themselves that they shouldn't have conceded either of the goals that they did.
Yeah, I think that's what they'll be most looking at, because they still scored two goals on the day.
Right.
And they still had the one-goal lead up until the final minute of halftime. So, yeah, I think that's what they're going to be looking at, especially that first one. It's just you get kind of a warning on the free kick where Bruin heads it off the crossbar, and then it's immediately out for a throw-in, and you just don't heed that warning and concede so easily from a long throw. I think they'll be really kicking themselves over that one.
And I think that there's a few guys that might be kicking themselves a little bit on that one. You know, I think that from my view on it, as a guy who's never played a minute of goalkeeper in his life, but I think you hear a lot of times that if a ball is in the air inside your six, that's got to be yours. I think Tim Melia might tell you he was a little too hesitant coming out to claim it. I think that maybe Jimmy Madronda, you know, might have fallen asleep for a second as his man snuck past him.
Yep.
Maybe Aiko Parra would feel like he should have done well to get to the first header in the first place, or maybe Graham Zusi dropping back. I just think that it's been the case with a lot of the goals this year where a lot of guys could put their hand up a little bit and say, you know what, I could have done something a little bit better there that would have prevented that goal from happening.
Yeah, even conceding the foul in the first place,
right,
where I think I thought he might have got shoved in the back and the ref didn't call it.
Yeah.
And then, which I think it was a foul.
I agree.
But it didn't get called, and so then seconds later, it's a rash challenge outside the area, and they give up this free kick in a really dangerous position. And this was I know it was a focus for the team coming into this game, is that this Seattle team poses such a threat on set pieces, and they've got they've got Bruin, Torres, Marshall can all come up. There's some big guys there, and all those guys are known to score as well from set piece situations. So I know they were trying to avoid these very situations. They concede that free kick, and then, like you said, like there's several chances before the goal happens that it could have been stopped in both the free kick and on the throw in. So yeah, I think a lot of people will just be looking at that goal and be very disappointed.
Yeah, you know, and then again, we go back to the positive side of things, though, which is that they did come back and score that goal to get something out of it, which is something we didn't see as often last year. Typically, if this team conceded two goals a year ago, that was a loss. And this time around, it does feel different. They do seem so much more dynamic going forward, even in a game like this, where I think they felt like they could have been more dynamic, could have created more chances in the game. And I think from a neutral's perspective, or for a ticket-paying customer perspective, you're getting entertained by these games this year. Sporting Kansas City are not going out and playing in a game where there's just being a ball knocked around for 90 minutes and not many scoring chances. These have been highly entertaining matches so far this season.
Yeah, they've been great. And Sporting has been playing with a lot of flair and attack. You see Johnny Russell draw the penalty in the first half, and that was a great move. Really swept from left to right so quickly.
Yeah.
That little move from Beasler just inside to start the entire passing sequence where he was faking left and just cut back a split pass centrally. Really, I don't think Seattle recovered from then. And the ability for Sporting to get it wide right to Johnny Russell so quickly and then got him locked in that one-on-one, and he just burned Nuhu on that play. And then, like you said, the ability to respond in the second half. They've got attacking talent. Shout out to the ball boys at the ball kids, I should say, at Children's Mercy Park. These quickly taken goal kicks, I know that they've done that in the past, but doesn't it this year? It seems even faster. Like it's, I mean,
it does.
It went from Nuhu blasting it over, and they must have got the ball in within a second or two.
Yeah.
It was so quick, Melia putting it down and getting it out to Jimmy Madronda, and then he just hits a otherworldly diagonal right onto the foot of Graham Zusi. And it shows the resiliency that this team has, which I think portends well for the rest of the season.
Yeah, and when you say shout out to the ball kids as well, there were a couple times where they took goal kicks, and there were a couple of balls being thrown out on the field. Like, it's like these ball kids, they know. They're prepared, and they're like, hey, as soon as that ball goes out, Tim Melia needs a soccer ball quickly. And they did. They got it going so quickly a couple times that Seattle was trying to institute a high press, and they couldn't step up fast enough because Melia already had the ball in play before they could organize. You were the one that pointed that out to me during the broadcast.
Well, it was great because Brian Schmetzer during the week in their Seattle media scrum actually pointed this out. He said, we want to force them to kick it long from goal kicks because they have Torres and Marshall as center backs, and they feel like those two guys are going to win most headers from goal kicks. Mm-hmm. Well, they weren't able to do that, and it came to fruition on that goal especially. They were unable to stop them from playing it quickly, and they got it out so quickly that Nuhu was still struggling to get back. So I thought props to Sporting Kansas City, Tim Melia, and just the game plan of getting these goal these restarts started so quickly.
You know, it's a shame to me that Johnny Russell doesn't get credit for a goal or an assist on a penalty situation like that.
I always thought that. The guy that draws it maybe should get an assist if it is converted.
Yeah. I think that Elie himself would tell you that that Johnny Russell did the hard part.
Yeah.
You know, he did the part where he actually earned the clear-cut scoring chance, which is the penalty, and all the PK taker that has to do is put it away. Yeah. When we talked to Elie on the show earlier this year, we asked him why he doesn't celebrate. He said, look, you shouldn't celebrate a penalty. You're supposed to score. It's like the old Chris Rock deal. You shouldn't want credit for things you're just supposed to do.
Yeah.
But I kind of like the chill celebration by Elie there.
Yeah.
But I feel like Johnny Russell deserved more than the two goals and two assists that he has so far this year.
Yeah, it does seem that way. That kind of relates like to basketball. There's a movement to give someone an assist if they have a pass that leads to a foul and free throws.
Right.
And
I've always thought that.
Yeah. Yeah. It's the same thing. You're getting if they score both of those points, you're getting 2 points because of this pass.
Right.
And that's what happened on this penalty. Is Johnny Russell just absolutely shreds Nuhu in this one-on-one situation and gets taken out. And yeah, he gets full credit from the team and from anyone watching, but just not in the box score.
Yeah, and Russell is quickly developing a reputation in this league that when he gets that ball at the corner of the penalty area and he's facing you, that's got to strike fear in the heart of any left back in the league right now, because he's showing that he can take you to the right, he can take you to the left. If you get two guys on him, he can split right between the two of you.
Yep.
It's been some incredible stuff so far. And then Graham Zusi with goal number two on the year for him after not scoring all of last year, and it came because of that great ball that was played by Jimmy Madronda. But something you also pointed out during our radio broadcast as well, Carter, that with Daniel Shalloway and Johnny Russell's ability to tuck inside, that gives Graham Zusi and Jimmy Madronda, whoever's playing at the left back spot, the ability to get out wide and make those long runs, and it poses a problem in terms of allocation for the other team, who you're going to mark, and those long diagonal balls that have been played so well by Beasler in the past and some of the other guys involved now, that's becoming a real weapon for Sporting Kansas City.
Yeah, it definitely is. And I think even more so on that right side. I think just how the team lines up, it's kind of unbalanced where where Shalloway is a little wider on the left and Quaze or whoever will kind of come in a little wider over there.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, Russell likes to tuck inside on to his left foot. And he and Graham Zusi are developing such a great combination, aren't they? I feel like they're really starting to develop a partnership. And so, yeah, Zusi gets way high up the pitch. And it is obviously didn't in that particular goal, but that big switch to Zusi has really paid dividends this year. And you're right, there's several guys that can play. I think Beasler can play that diagonal in his sleep. I mean, he can play it no look. That is just one of the best things about his game, is that huge diagonal from left to right. And this time it was Jimmy Madronda who had slotted into midfield at that point in time. Came back, got the pass, and just put it right on Zeus's foot. And what a goal from Zusi as well. Just no one closed him down, huh?
You got the sense that, I mean, and as I was broadcasting it, I felt this way. Anybody going to pick him up?
Yeah, it almost stop like ball on the fast break, right?
Like Zusi was kind of looking around like, I mean, I guess I'll just keep going to goal. Yeah. But I do think that actually takes some composure, because I think a lot of players, if they make a run that long and they find themselves inside the penalty area on the right-hand side, they're probably immediately thinking, I'm about to get closed down quickly, so I'm going to make a cross or I'm going to do something to get rid of it. he realized, no, I mean, if no one's going to pick me up, I'm going to take this all the way to the keeper. And just cool as you like, just put it right over.
And waited for the keeper to get on his butt, too. And then the chip is so delicate, the finish. And it's a really actually, underrated finish because the keeper is there, and there's also a defender on the line, and he gets it right over the keeper's glove. It's a really wonderful, really wonderful goal.
Fantastic stuff from Graham Zusi there. And Sporting Kansas City do come away with the draw. It's 6 matches unbeaten for Sporting Kansas City. We're going to take a break. When we come back, we're going to hear from Peter Vermees some updates on Felipe Gutierrez and the possible chase for a number 9. There's some big names being thrown out there in MLS. What does Peter Vermees have to say about that? Find out next on the Sporting Kansas City Show. Back on the Sporting Kansas City Show on your home for SKC Soccer, Sports Radio 810 WHB, Nate Pucati along with Carter Augustine. Coming up in the next segment, we're going to hear from Kerry Zavagnin, assistant coach for SKC. But this segment, let's hear some sound bites from Peter Vermees. He spoke to the media at training today. Carter, you, of course, were there as always. And one of the things that Peter talked about was the recovery process of Felipe Gutierrez. He said that no new injuries taking place in Sunday's game. A little bit of a quick turnaround here, going from a Sunday to a Friday game. So that's certainly good news. But let's get an update from Peter Vermees here on where Felipe Gutierrez, in terms of trying to work his way back from his hip injury.
He's progressed a lot. He did a little training yesterday. He'll probably do a little bit more today, and we'll keep trying to build him up over the week.
All right, Carter, so working his way back into training, that's certainly a good sign right there. We'll see here in the next couple of days if that means he's fit enough to try to get on the field on Friday. But either way, if he's starting to participate more fully in training, you got to think it's a matter of time before he's back in the 11 for SKC.
Yeah, if he's getting back into training, that's a good sign. And Peter Vermees kind of sounded upbeat in that particular clip, just the progress that Gutierrez is making. And we've heard Vermees say several times that he's going to be overly cautious.
Yeah.
And especially, I think, early on in the season, we're only 7 games in. You still have quite a bit of a chunk of the season left, so you don't want to rush Felipe Gutierrez back at all. And so, but sounds like good progress being made.
So, in the meantime, if he's not ready, I think that we've seen that Johan Quaze went 70 minutes 2 games ago, bumped up to 74 minutes this time around, and seems to me to be getting a little more comfortable in the system with Sporting Kansas City right now.
I think so. I think he did a couple of things really well in the game. I think when he gets to the final third is kind of where it's starting to break down for Quaze at the moment, but he's showing that strength in midfield. Isn't he? They had that one turn in midfield that was brilliant, and it really set away a Sporting KC counterattack. But then when he got the ball back centrally, he sprayed a pass right, and it was just off. So he hasn't hit the ground running like Gutierrez and Russell have, I don't think. But he's starting to show some of those flashes that you can see why they brought him here.
Yeah, I think sometimes patience, is required when it comes to guys.
For sure.
Fitting in, finding their way with the team, learning the system, all that. And so we'll see if that continues for Johan Quaze.
I'll say one thing is that Jimmy Madronda has shown pretty well, I think, in terms of the last 15 minutes of those 2 games that you just mentioned, mm-hmm. where he got shifted into midfield in both of those games. He seems to be more confident dribbling now, I think. He's always had the technique and the skill, but I don't know if the time spent out at left back has helped him in that regard. But when he has been shifted into those positions late in the game, haven't you noticed that he's driving at the defense and trying to force things as well?
Well, as Peter Vermees said, the soccer part's never been the problem for Jimmy Madronda. It's building that engine up to where he could play centrally for a full 90 minutes. Yeah. And, look, he hasn't played centrally for a full 90 minutes in these 2 games because he started off on at the left back position. I don't know. That position seems to require a lot of work as well. You're pushing all the way into the attack. You're tracking all the way back. I mean, you're playing end line to end line, basically, in that role. And the fact that he's been able to do that for 70-some minutes and then switch over for the final 20 to 15 minutes and play centrally in midfield makes you hope that engine is getting built up for Madronda, that he is an option if you want him in that role.
Yeah, and I think he is proving to be more and more of an option. You're right. I think that stamina is building up. But he's also done really well at left back, and those dribbling skills have helped out in his left back position as well. So I think he's really forced his way into Peter Vermees' plans. But I'm curious to see if he'll get more time in midfield as the season goes on, or if he'll be sticking out at left back.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see. I mean, the good news is he seems to be comfortable in both situations, yeah. Which that versatility never hurts through the grind of a long MLS season. Now, of course, one of the topics that's been going on ever since last season, the search for a number nine. Of course, Peter Vermes, I think, quick to point out, there's a couple of guys in Kyrie Shelton and Diego Rubio that are doing good things for Sporting Kansas City right now, but there are also all those rumors out there. Some big-name players have been thrown out that might be interested in coming to MLS, Fernando Torres being one, Bobby Wood being another. Now, not necessarily any specific links to Sporting Kansas City with those players, particularly maybe not with Bobby Wood, but they are players that play that position that might be interested in coming to MLS. And apparently one of the members of the media asked Peter Vermes if he would have any interest in pursuing either of those players today. And here was his response.
I would say probably all of the above. And we'll kind of see where it goes from there.
So not much of an answer from Peter Vermes on that question, Carter. And look, first of all, I think you have to take into consideration you were there when it happened. A little bit of a Cheshire Cat smile,
yep.
From Peter Vermes on it. I think he's just having a little fun with the media if you get a question like that. But I know that from the conversations we've had with Peter Vermes, he's made it pretty clear he likes the guys that he has right now. He's been very happy with the job that Kyrie Shelton's done so far. He doesn't have a goal to his name yet so far this season, but he's got a couple of assists. He's doing the things that Peter Vermes wants out of that number nine when it comes to initiating the attack and putting the work rate in and setting up chances for other players as well. Diego Rubio's got a big goal this season as well to get a result in Colorado. So I think Peter Vermes isn't going to shoot down any of those types of speculations, but I don't think we can make too much of anything that he said here today.
Yeah, I mean, credit to Bob Russert for asking the question, because those rumors for Torres and Wood are flying out there in terms of them being interested in coming to MLS. I think one thing, the team's going to need goals from the number nine position. Everyone knows that. That's what you expect from that position. But one thing that Peter Vermes will bring up is that this team is unbeaten when Kyrie Shelton is playing because of everything he does for the team, like you said. So he had a great chance to open his account for Sporting KC in the game against Seattle. He's got to score that one. But you just wonder if he sees one hit the back of the net, maybe that can help Shelton take off. But, yeah, I don't know if there's an answer in there either, because he does like to poke fun at the media sometimes, and he had a little grin on his face when he answered. But he's certainly not going to burn any bridges when it comes to the likes of Fernando Torres and Bobby Wood.
Yeah, I mean, and it's been talked about for Sporting KC having an interest in a player like that or so. I agree with your point about Kyrie Shelton as well. Like, man, if you just get one in, does that change the confidence level? And it seems like sometimes those things can come in a hurry after that. And he hasn't been far off. And one thing I'll say is he's putting his chances on frame right now as well. So maybe we'll see it Friday night against the Vancouver Whitecaps. You know, you get a big goal from Kyrie Shelton, and maybe nobody's even asking these questions here in the near future.
That's a good point. You know, he could do a lot to dispel any of these questions for the future if he can, like you said, just get that first goal to really get him going, because he does so many other things well for the team. Of course, there is some time left in this window until the early parts of May, and then it closes, and then the window will open up again in July. And so I think Peter Vermes has said several times over that it's a living, breathing document, the team's roster, mm-hmm. and that he's always looking at new players and evaluating the players that he has. So I wouldn't be surprised if they're still looking for striking options to bolster the ranks.
That probably goes for the entire roster.
That goes,
like you said,
I mean,
that's
not
just the number nine. That's, yeah. If they think there's somebody out there that they can fit into their salary structure who can improve the team, regardless of the position, they're going to be open to kicking the tires on.
Yeah, and you know, you wonder if a player like Lee Nguyen has come into any discussions, because he's on the out with New England Revolution.
Can't believe the way that thing's played
so,
out.
So, yeah, I think you're right. I think they're always looking, and strikers no different. And with the guys like Fernando Torres and Bobby Wood saying that they're interested, you would imagine that they are kicking the tires on those guys.
At least find out what the score is on mm-hmm. all situations. Of course, there's a lot of other things that come into play. You know, the discovery order, which you and I both agree on, is a bit of a silly thing. Someone discovered Fernando Torres.
Yeah, what a weird rule. It's one of my least favorite in MLS. I mean, sometimes this league gets to be a bit like Calvin Ball, and it kind of does seem to be made up as it goes along. But discovery rights, like you said, first of all, the fact that you're discovering Leo Messi. Someone has discovery rights for Leo Messi in this league.
Yeah.
And
Christopher Columbus discovered America. I was like, there's all these people that are already living here, but I discovered it.
Yeah. Yeah. That part to me is ridiculous. And then it's even compounded in ridiculousness by the fact that, well, if the player doesn't want to go to that team, but he wants to go to another team in MLS, the discovery rights don't matter. You'll get a little chunk of GAM or TAM to pass those along to the team that he wants to go to, and the league will facilitate that particular move. Yeah. So the discovery rights thing is weird, but it certainly means that Chicago has the inside track on Fernando Torres right now. They have his discovery rights, and Veljko Panovic played with Torres in the early stages of Torres' career. So you would think that the Fire have the inside track.
That's exactly what Chicago needs, right? They need a striker.
Yeah.
We'll see. That's one of the things that's always interesting, too. How are they going to fit all these things together in the different teams?
I think they're worried about putting some people in seats is what I think they're more concerned with.
Well, Zlatan Ibrahimovic did that for them last weekend. So maybe if they could just get him to come to town as an opponent every week, they'd be all right. I think Peter Vermes is worried about fit. He wants guys that are going to fit into his system to play the way that he wants to play. And we'll see where it shakes out. Like you said, I think Peter Vermes is never done. He's never resting. He's never going to stop looking to see at any position on the field where the team can improve. So with that, we'll take a break. When we come back, we're going to hear from Kerry Zavagnin, assistant coach for Sporting Kansas City, right after this on the SKC Show. Welcome back to the Sporting Kansas City Show here on your home for Sporting Kansas City Soccer, Sports Radio 810 WHB. As we get you ready for a Friday night kickoff this week, Sporting Kansas City with another big Western Conference matchup. They host the Vancouver Whitecaps at 8 o'clock. Finally, the temperatures should be fairly comfortable out, so go ahead and get your tickets if you don't have them already at sportingkc.com or 888-4KC-GOAL. And we're joined now by assistant coach Kerry Zavagnin as we get ready for this game as well. Good evening, Kerry. How are you?
Good, Nate. How you doing?
Doing great. And first things first, before we even look back on last week's game or look forward to this one, there's a milestone coming up for one of your players in Matt Beisler. I don't know. Have you seen this already before I even break the news to you?
Yeah. Look, I was introduced to this idea just this morning, having done an interview. And as I said during the interview, finding any which way possible to either get him traded or get him out of the starting lineup this weekend.
You beat me to the punch. I was going to say, if I were in your position, I would be doing whatever I could to sabotage this man. He's one start away from the record for starts in franchise history, which you own. Look, I don't know. You tell me. What does that mean to you just in terms of the fact that you've been the guy that's had that record to this point?
Well, look, it was never something that I was focused on as a player. I wasn't involved in the game to achieve individual milestones or hold any records. I just tried to do my best and make myself invaluable to the team over the course of my career. And you know, it was a very simple goal of trying to start the next game and be a part of the next game. And I always wanted to be a starter and a key member on a team, but I took it one game at a time, and obviously at the end of my career was able to put a lot of games together, which obviously the record speaks for itself. But to see Matt now on the cusp of this, I can't say I'm overly surprised. My first interaction with him when he first came into the team, one of the only guys, in fact the only guy, who during the individual meetings when Peter and the rest of the staff took over the team, had a clear picture of what he wanted to accomplish as a player. And he had his goals written down of what he wanted to do. And you can see this many years later that he's not only accomplished those goals that he set, I think he's probably exceeded some of them, both at the club level here in Kansas City and the World Cup and the international level. So a lot of credit to him. I know how much work he's put in, having spent a good portion of these last many years with him. So it's a great achievement for him and great for us that we've been able to have a player like this and, more importantly, a person like this at the club for this amount of time.
And, Kerry, for Matt's part, we got a chance to talk to him about it, and he said, you know, growing up, he was able to watch you as a player out there, and he said he thought you were always an underrated player. So this is one of those records that speaks highly to your value on the field. But I think that leads to my question. Is it somewhat special for you that Matt is from Kansas City and managed to do this for his hometown club?
Yeah, I think it adds a little extra to the to the moment. And obviously, this game has grown tremendously in Kansas City over the years, and you know, having played a small part of that in the early stages when we were at Arrowhead and then Community America Ballpark to help build the foundation of where we were going to take this organization is certainly a nice feather in the cap, if you will, in terms of my individual career. But to see Matt kind of take the baton, I think it's been tremendous to see him evolve as a player and to be from Kansas City, and something that the people of Kansas City can be proud of, one of their own, is a great addition to what is already a great achievement on his part.
But all that being said, if he gets subbed off in the 53rd minute, we'll know who's behind it.
Yeah, no doubt. Look, I'm going to be pushing from the first minute to get him off the field. But look, all kidding aside, he's been such an integral part. I know you guys have been around the team, and you know what kind of guy he is, and he's helped establish this culture and has been a core member, the leader, the captain of this group, who's been such good defensive team over the many years that he's led the back line. So it's very difficult to have anything negative to say about the player as in terms of how he is on the field. And by all accounts of anybody that's been around him, everyone would probably say the same thing. He's just a tremendous person, and we're lucky to have him here in this club.
Well, certainly we'll be watching on Friday night as we're visiting with Kerry Zavagnin. Matt Beisler, should he make the start on Friday, would pass Kerry Zavagnin for the most league starts in club history, and if he makes it to the 54th minute, would pass him for minutes all time. So that's what we're talking about, in case people have just tuned in and are wondering what we're talking about here. Let's get to the soccer, Kerry. This past weekend's game against Seattle, you come away with a 2-2 draw. You do get a big goal as an answer to Seattle jumping up 2-1 when Graham Zusi was able to score to make it 2-2. So you come away with something. Does that make it mixed emotions? How do you guys process a game like last Sunday's?
Yeah, I think the initial reaction, and even over the course of the game as we went through it, regardless of what the score was at the time, I think we just felt that we weren't at our best, and I don't think we put in a great performance. And you know, I use the word initiative in the game, and it's one thing, and you and I have spoken about this, to have possession in the game and to make it feel like you're in control of the game. But I don't necessarily think, despite the fact that we had a lot of the ball, that we were really in control. And you know, we lost a lot of individual duels, which points a little bit towards the attitude and the mentality, not only of our guys, but of their guys, knowing that they were coming into a difficult place. I think they were up for the occasion when it comes to the individual duels. And then from a team perspective, I don't think we put ourselves in really dangerous areas to capitalize on some situations that we could have been more dangerous on. Now, that's not to say that Ike in front of the goal couldn't have put it in, or Elie in on the doorstep. We had chances to score, but I think when you look at the game, I think, you know, overall you would say we don't feel like, and we didn't look like we were at our best. We didn't take the initiative of the game, and that's something that we're going to have to improve upon if we're going to get the results at home that we're looking for.
Kerry, we haven't got a chance to catch up with you so far this season, so I'm just curious. I know you guys usually talk about the first 10 games of a season really is what you need to be able to tell what type of team you have. You guys are unbeaten in the last six now to start the season. What do you make so far of the group and how they are developing as a team, as you guys did bring in quite a few new players in the offseason?
Well, I think the one thing that stands out from this group that may be different from some years past is that we've shown the ability both to go get points on the road and also to come from behind. I think in that Chicago game, being away and going through that roller coaster of emotions only to come back at the end and you know, steal the victory away with two goals, winning 4-3, I think that speaks a lot about the character early in this season of this group, that they're willing to fight for each other to get the result. And it's not easy going on the road. It's even harder going on the road, going behind, and coming back to win. So I think we're really happy with that aspect of it. Obviously, the expectations internally of what we're looking to achieve as a team this year and as a club, you know, annually is very, very high. So where we sit right now in the league in terms of our wins and losses and draws, I think we'd have to be pretty satisfied with that, knowing that we've brought a lot of new guys into the club. But at the same time, I think we're left with wanting a lot more. And I think this game against Seattle, as we went into the game, we go into every home game wanting 3 points. But I think we left a little bit on the table in how we approached the game and the result that we got out of it.
So that seems like that's a pretty good spot to be in. If you're in first place, you got a 4-point advantage, but you still feel like there's things to work on. As a coach, that seems like a really good spot to be.
Yeah, it is, and we don't get too high or too low based on the results of the game. We understand that this is a really long season. You go through some difficult moments. Even Toronto last year, the Supporters Shield winners, they had some tough moments and some adversity that they had to go through. So we know it's coming. We know we faced a little bit already, but where we sit in the standings and to get the amount of points that we've gotten at this point of the season, it's encouraging, but we know that we have to keep accumulating points if we're going to be in the position that we want to be in at the end of the year.
We're visiting with Kerry Zavagnin, assistant coach for Sporting Kansas City, and I've also spent enough time around you and Peter, Kerry, to know that, look, I'll say this for the fans, these games have been tremendously exciting so far this year. I mean, there's goals, there's attacking opportunities, but I feel like I've spent enough time around you guys to know that you're not satisfied with some of the goals that are being conceded, and I got the sense from listening to Peter after Seattle's game that was the case again. What do you guys go back and address after those situations? And I guess, what did you make of those two situations in the game?
Well, I think when you evaluate the games, it's not just about the moments that you've given up the goals. It's easy to go into the video session on the Monday after a game and show the goals and point out who was responsible. It's really the overall. How did you defend? How did you attack? There were plenty of opportunities where Seattle could have capitalized on our laziness, if you will, defensively, or our inability to tactically cover the situation. I think there were moments where Seattle could have capitalized on that, and we pointed that out. But certainly with the goals, to give one up at that time right before halftime is something that I think we have to look at closely, because it was as much a mentality of finishing out the half than anything else, and that's something that's easily within your control to change the attitude, the mentality, and make sure you finish out the halves. And then in the second half, the ability for us to recover. I know Seattle was created a good counterattack, but our commitment to recover and deal with the play was again below our standard, and those two situations really point towards what I alluded to at the beginning, which was our lack of initiative, our approach to the game. It wasn't at its maximum, and if you do that and you don't bring your maximum intensity to the game, we all know in Major League Soccer anybody can beat anyone on any given day.
I'm not looking for excuses here, certainly, Kerry, but when you've mentioned like initiative and all of that, I mean, I look at that game and I sense desperation from Seattle. We talk about desperate defending, and we use that word a lot. They were looking for their first win of the season. They knew they had to get something out of a game sooner or later, so they seemed desperate. On the flip side, you guys were coming off of a really emotionally charged game where the entire, attention of the soccer country was in Los Angeles against Zlatan Ibrahimovic and all of that. Do you think there's some just human nature there of, coming off of a game like that and coming up against a team that hadn't won a game yet this season?
I think there is, but that's what makes the difference between good and great teams. The teams that are able to turn it on and do what's necessary to win the games. And you see it in all of sports. There's a letdown after a great moment, but the teams that really are able to separate themselves from the pack are the ones that are able to take care of business regardless of the situation. And, the one thing that we pointed out about Seattle prior to the game is, say what you will about the beginning of the season, say what you will about the quality of their play up until that point, but this is a team that's been in the finals the last 2 years, so they've shown the ability to find a way to keep themselves in games, keep themselves relevant within the season, and they're there at the end. So, it would have been naive of us to expect anything else but a Seattle team that was willing to scrap and fight for every inch on the field.
So you guys move forward this Friday, home game again against Vancouver this time around. For the neutral, it looks like a really interesting watch. They're averaging around 30% possession on the road this year, and they're a team that looks to be more comfortable without the ball. Of course, you guys like to control the ball, like to control possession. And it seems like their best attack is off capitalizing off other people's mistakes. What type of challenge does Vancouver poise to you guys on Friday?
Well, to an extent, you know, anytime a team comes into our home, they tend to sit back, they tend to concede possession, and that exists for many teams. The thing that I'll say different about Vancouver is they're really, really good at conceding possession, and as you said, being very dangerous on the transition and counterattacks, and also on set pieces with their size and their strength. So those are two things that we contend with on a regular basis here at home. For the most part, but here it's emphasized even more because I think it's an approach, it's a style of Vancouver, and they do this very, very well. So for us, it's a challenge in being balanced. It's a challenge of being in control of the game. And you know, I said this a little bit earlier, just because you have possession of the ball doesn't mean you're in control of the game. And so we need to be relevant when we have the ball. We need to create opportunities and not just pass the ball around the field and be content with the fact that we have it. That's going to be an important piece of the game, and to put Vancouver in uncomfortable positions, which I think we have the capacity to do. It's whether we're willing to go out there and execute.
Well, it should be a lot of fun on Friday night, and finally we're going to get some decent weather, I think, knock on wood.
Yeah, it's been quite a year so far. I don't think I've been part of a season where the weather progressively gets colder, but it seems to be a unique situation with the weather this year.
It's like the opposite.
Hopefully this week.
Yeah. It's like the opposite of Game of Thrones. Summer is coming.
Yeah, exactly.
We've just been talking about it for forever, but it is coming, I promise.
Yeah.
Kerry, thanks so much for the time. We really appreciate it. Best of luck on Friday night.
Yeah, thanks, guys. Talk to you soon.
All right, there is Kerry Zavagnin, assistant coach for Sporting Kansas City. We'll take a break. Back after this with more of the Sporting KC show right here on Sports Radio 810 WHB. All right, back to wrap things up on another edition of the Sporting Kansas City show right here on your home for Sporting KC Soccer, Sports Radio 810 WHB. A couple things to get to, Carter, before we sign off here tonight. Number one, CONCACAF Champions League final tonight. The first leg in Toronto, where the weather is miserable. This is one you can watch, hopefully, on the Go 90 app. We had some problems in the semifinals that had me wanting to throw my laptop out of the window, but luckily I didn't. So
it's on Univision too, if you do have that.
If you have Univision,
more reliable. Yeah,
yeah, the old school terrestrial cable,
or TSN 2. If
TSN
you're
2.
Listening in Canada,
that's right.
I know we're big in Saskatchewan.
We're huge in Saskatoon, no doubt about it. So Toronto FC against Chivas de Guadalajara. I haven't looked at any, you know, betting services or anything like that, but I would think Toronto come into this final as the favorite. How do you size it up as you look at these two teams in a two-leg final?
I think so. I think Toronto will really be favored in this matchup. They've already beaten Tigres, defending champions in Mexico.
And two better clubs than Chivas, in my opinion.
Yeah, and obviously and they're looking for coming off this win against Club America, that they're trying to make it three in a row against Liga MX teams, which would be a really impressive feat. I'm reading that it'll be their fourth championship in less than 10 months. So this is a very good Toronto team. I think getting that first leg at home should help. As long as you can keep a clean sheet, that should help. But it's going to be a great game. It's going to be a great series because Chivas, like you said, they're kind of down and out elsewhere, so they're really looking for this as a trophy to bolster their own trophy cabinet and to keep this streak of Mexican teams winning the Champions League alive, which is pretty extensive.
So are we to root for Toronto in this? And I pose that for a couple of reasons. I mean, I think that we all as MLS want to see an MLS side win. Do we care that it's Canadian side? And do we care that, hey, Sporting Kansas City are going to be in this next year? Why not Sporting Kansas City be the first MLS team to win it? Or do we just say, no, look, this is a big feather in the cap for MLS, so we want Toronto FC to go take care of business and prove that the league is getting more to an equal footing with Liga MX?
It's a tough one, right? I always go through this with like people rooting for their conference teams
right.
in tournaments and stuff
right.
like that.
Do you root for your arch rival yeah. because they're from your conference when you get to a bowl game or the NCAA tournament?
Yeah, exactly, which I never do. I always root against them. So it's tough for me to be hypocritical, but I'm going to be. I guess it's not tough for me to be hypocritical. It's easy, and that's what I'm going to do right now because I think it just will really help the international exposure and just overall opinion of MLS if Toronto FC can win this, because that gets them to the Club World Cup, and then you get a little bit more exposure in terms of playing against the winner of the UEFA Champions League. And it shows how far we have come. I know that DC United and LA Galaxy fans will say, hey, we won this tournament back when before it was a Champions League. But I think it's been a more accurate reflection these past 11 or so years where Mexican teams just keep winning. The gulf, especially in just the salaries and the depth of these teams. And so for Toronto to be able to do this, I think it would really speak highly of the league's progress. That being said, there will be a feather in the cap of whoever can do it first. So maybe yep. there is a bit of that. We would rather do it. It'd be more interesting if it was Seattle Sounders, right? Or if it was like a team that, you know, Houston Dynamo or
Real Salt Lake.
Yeah, Real Salt Lake. It would be, I think, a little different if it was one of those teams. But Toronto, playing once a year,
yeah,
doesn't really have the same kind of hatred in terms of playing against an MLS team.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting. The game starts at 7:15, so just a matter of minutes away. Check it out if you can, Univision or the Go 90 app or go90.com. All right. On to Friday night, Sporting Kansas City, Vancouver Whitecaps. I'm hoping we have a great crowd at Children's Mercy Park. Finally get some decent weather out there. SportingKC.com for tickets or 888-4KC-GOLD. There are tickets available. Come out for this one because this is a rematch against a game, to me, that maybe typified the frustrations of the end of the season last year for Sporting. This started their five-match winless streak to end the season that saw them go from a really good playoff spot all the way to having to play on the road against Houston in the first round. And to me, it kind of typified it too. Chances early to put Vancouver away, missed a penalty, missed some close range shots, end up losing the game even though they dominated possession against Vancouver. I think this is a chance to prove that Sporting are, in fact, a very different team this year than a year ago.
Yeah, it is. And it should kind of shape up the same way, you would think, the game in terms of just how the game will play out, because the Vancouver team, again this year, they don't like the ball, especially on the road. They're comfortable without the ball, and then they hit you so quickly on the counter. And I don't know about you, but I'm really curious. We've heard from Peter Vermes, Ike Opara, among others, that the goals, especially at the beginning of the year, were individual mistakes. I'm curious. I think this is going to be a really tough challenge for Sporting KC because that's exactly the type of goal that Vancouver thrives on, and that's how they usually create their goals, is that high press, forcing a quick turnover, and quickly moving into transition. So I think those two things really match up well as well.
Well, they got a guy like Breck Shea that's got a lot of pace, you know, long striding guy that can score goals. Almost all their goals have come from Kai Kamara and Breck Shea this yep. year. Kamara took an injury in their last game, a home loss to LAFC. So I'm not sure if we're going to get to see him play in this game, which I don't think anybody from Sporting Kansas City is going to have a problem with if he wants to sit this one out. But where do the goals come from for Vancouver if he's not out there? I think it's a good question, but also that situation, like you said, I mean, Sporting Kansas City, if they like to play keep away, Vancouver likes to play keep it away.
Yeah.
Like, we don't want the ball. You can bring it forward, get all your guys up the field. Then when we do take it from you, you're a little bit out of balance defensively, and we can hit you with that pace. Young guy to keep an eye on is Alphonso Davies, one of the best
good
young
player.
Teenage players. He doesn't look like a 17-year-old out there.
No, he's a good player with a very bright future, and one of the players that he brings fans to their seats or off their seats. Like
yeah.
he gets
you
on the ball.
He gets your feet. Yeah. Yeah. Or you sit on the edge of your seat when
exactly.
you see him with the ball.
He gets on the ball and everyone in the stadium is aware that this is a possibility of this kid creating something. So you mentioned Shea. If he's able to play from the start, he and Davies are two very quick guys on the counter. I think what we heard from Kerry Zemagnon, I like the word that he used. I don't know if I've ever heard this, be relevant in possession, because
yeah.
just having possession doesn't do anything. You've got to be testing and probing at the same time, pushing Vancouver back so they're not just comfortable allowing you just pass it along the back and then hit you on that counter, because they are so quick in transition. that they really do pose a threat. And they've been one of the better away teams in MLS over the past couple of years under Carl Robinson because they're so good at counterattacking on the road.
All right, Carter, it's been fun as always. We will see you on Friday night at Children's Mercy Park.
Yeah, should be a good one. Hopefully, like you said, for some decent weather, but it should be a very good game. Two teams towards the top of the Western Conference at the early start of the season.
What's better on a Friday night? A little Friday night soccer for you here in the spring in the soccer capital, Sporting Kansas City, and the Vancouver Whitecaps, 8 o'clock Friday night. Get your tickets at sportingkc.com or 888-4KC-GOAL. And, of course, you can watch on Fox Sports Kansas City as well. For Kerry Zavagnin, for Carter Augustine, this is Nate Buchady saying thanks for listening. We'll see you next time on the Sporting Kansas City Show.